The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hi, I'm Dom Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. And joining me today on the panel are Father Andrew Kinstetter. Hey, Father.
Hello there.
And Pat Scott. Hey, Pat.
Greetings and salutations.
Before we get into today's show, I want to tell you all about another show on the StarQuest Network I'm sure you'll enjoy, called The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows, which you can find wherever fine podcasts are found, or at sqpn.com/secrets. So today we have a very fun topic. We're talking about how to get your tech ready to recycle or resell. We've actually talked about the process of reselling or recycling or disposing of in some way your old tech. We did that way back in episode 112. We'll have a link in the show notes to that. But there is a step before that where we want to talk about how to get your stuff ready, because, you know, all of these devices we own, whether they're phones or tablets or computers, are full of our data, and they are attached to us in, you know, metaphorically and sometimes physically in many ways that we need to detach them from us. And so we wanted to talk about some of the things we need to think about before we get rid of our old tech. And I want to start just by asking you all, you know, is there anything, you know, do you have any tales of woe, anything, you know, you call when you've had to get rid of a device, and whether you forgot to, you know, to remove data, or you received a device with data on it. I have a small stack of laptops of old MacBooks and iBooks, if you remember those, in my closet, all with these hard drives full of data that at the time I just didn't wipe the drives. And now I'm kind of stuck, because if I want to clear those drives out, I've got to figure out some way to boot up these old computers and wipe the drives. I've also got a stack of hard drives in my closet with the same thing. And that's one of the things I want to avoid, is, you know, in the future, and try to help people avoid having that problem. If you think ahead of time when you're getting rid of a device, you won't have that problem. Do either of you have a similar problem to me?
Well, I have a lot of clients that say, here's a bunch of phones or iPads or whatever, and hand them to me, and here, donate them after they've been wiped. And I have varying success. Sometimes it requires, you know, getting on the phone, and they don't remember what the passcode was to get into the device. Sometimes we, again, as you say, we have trouble booting it. Sometimes it's the fact that we can get in and use the device fine, but they don't remember the app, you know, the password that goes along with it, and so we can't wipe it. Or sometimes they'll wipe it, and it'll look fine until I start getting in, and it says, oh, this has got the activation lock. And at that point, I may not even have the name of the person on the device. I don't even know who I can call, because I get so many of these. So
sure. Right.
The saddest one was last week when a lady said she bought a really nice iPad from a pawn shop, and it was not deactivated. And I had to tell her there was nothing we could do, absolutely nothing, because
right,
the owner would not have had a way to get back with the original owner of the device, etc.
Right. That's the big thing, is like, there's no way Apple can't do anything, or whoever, Google, whatever. It's stuck. It's junk now. How about you, Father?
Thankfully, no tales of woe. Mm. My tale is actually kind of on the fun side, more in the line of, I still have my Windows, or not mine. Well, it is mine, but it was the family's Windows 95 machine. And what's cool about it is I've never meant to sell it, so I'm not even in that position, but it's almost become a bit of a time capsule, because yep, we kept the data on it, or I kept all the data that I was goofing off with. And it's funny, because I go
and
back
programs
now and right. And actually, I was playing with it just the other day, and in one of the programs, it's kind of a fun simulated, basically a simulated environment where you can write books and put together scrapbooks and stuff, and you can password protect the books that you make. And I wrote a bunch of things in junior high school, kind of Star Wars fan fiction, my one attempt at it, and I had password protected all those books. So I can view them. I just can't edit them.
Oh, because at least I have you can view them, though.
Yeah. I have no idea what my password was. So similar thing. So it's kind of a cool time capsule. I can't go back and edit it and change it. It is what it is. And it is kind of fun to do that. So even like Dom, I was thinking in your situation, all your old laptops, each of them in a sense is its cool little time machine.
Oh yeah.
And your kids might find some. Yeah. Yeah. That's the trick.
I would love to get into them and kind of poke around, and like whenever I see like an old computer and, you know, it boots up and it's like an old Mac or an old Apple II, and I'm like, oh, I remember that, you know, that
right.
tech geek nostalgia, you know, that, wow, I remember when it was like that and playing that game or using that software, Apple Works, which was probably the single greatest piece of software ever made, in my opinion. I'd love to get in and even see the data, see what's in there. Yeah. I have a box of floppy drives in my tech closet of woe, and I need to get like an old USB 3.5-inch drive and see what's on them, you know, that sort of thing.
I may have one I could send you.
I have one. I was playing with it just this, yeah.
nice. I mean, it's there is it goes to show that there's a lot of data that are on these things, and you know, there's sometimes is sensitive data, financial data, personal information, but so even things like emails and other stuff. And I have, you know, gotten used things where people have left their data on them, and you know, I don't poke around, I wipe the drive, but not everyone will do that, and so. You really want to take the time to clear out your stuff off of, and like you said, Pat, especially these days where the way that they're made is if you don't unlock it, if you don't deactivate it, it's no good to anybody except as parts. So
right. I know Apple has made robots that will strip all those devices and be able to take them back to components, but. Yeah, up until like a couple years ago, the Google devices didn't have the activation lock. So it was, you know, even if you didn't know the passwords, there was ways you could get in and do it. And I ran across my first old one that I couldn't do that with the other day. It was just, there was nothing I could do. I even bought a program to do it, and it said, oh, I'm sorry, but not this LG. Well, that one won't work.
right. So let's talk about some generic principles, some general rules, and then we'll get into some specifics that are related to like Apple, Android, and Windows specific things that we need to think about. But in general, first step before you're going to get rid of anything, back up your data. Make sure it's backed up, and not just it's in the cloud, like you have your cloud photo library. I mean, make a second copy, maybe a third copy as well, of all your data. And put it somewhere offline, you know, on a hard drive that's not attached to anything. Because as my rule is always, if it doesn't exist in three places, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, so back it up. And that's photos, videos, documents, contacts, everything. And you know, and again, even if it's in Google Drive, even if it's in iCloud or Dropbox, make sure it's also in an external hard drive, SSD, thumb drive, something that's not attached to anything before you wipe anything. That's just...
It is getting harder to do that, though. Like with a 256 gigabyte iPhone, I don't have a device that has that much free space to back up my phone.
Right.
Because it does not just say, well, the photos are in the cloud. It backs them up. And so, and it doesn't let you put it anywhere other than their own special location. So... You know, backing it up to a physical device is getting real hard.
So if you have, I say this because I know the iPhone better than I know Android. But for iPhone, there's a piece of software called iMazing, and it is amazing because one thing it will do is it will let you do more complex or more flexible backups than what That's Apple's true. Built-in mm-hmm. system will do. So you can back that up to an external, directly to an external hard drive, for example. So if you've got a terabyte SSD attached to your MacBook or, whatever your Mac is, you can back it up directly to that and save it off there. So that's a piece of software.
It is a paid product, right?
It is a paid product, but it is a great product. And it allows you, you can also use it to manage your whole family's iPhones and iPads and that sort of thing. So it's, I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but it's iMazing.com is the software. And, So that's the first step is back up your data. Then you're going to want to wipe your device, but let me back up. Don't follow along as we talk about this in the show. Listen to us whole show.
Read your notes later.
Yeah, then do it later. Okay, so don't follow along. I put an asterisk on wipe your device because there are some steps involved depending on what kind of device you have. You have to do certain special things before you do that. But that would be the next step is after you've backed up your data, there are ways to wipe your device, whether it's a phone or a computer or a tablet. And you want to make sure you take it all the way to factory reset. There's some that'll just like erase data, whatever. You want to do factory reset. You want to clear that back to like it came out of the box. Some people want to be nice, they think, by handing a device with apps and software on it to someone else. In addition to that, just not being permissible under software licensing, that's not usually allowed. It also creates problems for you because all that software, if you've bought it through an app store, is tied to your account, and that means that every time this person that you give your device to needs to update or do something, they're gonna be bugging you for your password to your account to upgrade. So that's just not doesn't work that way. So you do want to bring it back to a factory reset. If you are using a device that uses SIM cards or memory cards, a lot of Android phones will have memory cards these days. And some phones still use SIM cards. You do want to make sure you remove those because not only does a SIM card for a phone have your account information with your carrier, but they will also sometimes carry contact information and other data that's connected to you.
I don't think on the iPhone that the SIMs actually carried anything except just the carrier information.
Right.
But Androids, yes. You could have your contacts or your pictures over there.
And pretty much everything since the iPhone 12 is eSIM now, yeah. I think they're all eSIM. So there's not even an issue with that for those. But this is mainly for non-Apple and in older devices. And then if you're reselling your device, get the accessories that came with it, the cable, the power, the charger block, the, whatever you can, get it all together and, you add value to it by having all of the pieces that come with it so that when you do take it to, a Facebook marketplace or whatever, or one of these marketplaces that you can resell it, you can just, hand it all in and you don't have all this extra e-waste junk hanging around your house. Any general tips that we want to talk before we get into the specifics? Did I miss anything or anything that makes sense?
Some older devices don't really have a way to get back to factory reset within the product. Others, you have to have special accommodations to get some other device to help you wipe it. And so I just wanted to mention that.
Right.
All the stuff recently, has a factory back to reset, but a lot of the older stuff didn't.
And obviously with a PC, a Mac or a Windows PC, you want to, format the drive or, go into, like on a Mac, I would take it into, we'll talk about the Apple specific steps in a bit, but you would go into recovery and wipe the drive back to factory and, go from there. On Windows, you would format the drive and reinstall Windows or, that sort of thing.
I would just add one thing, more of a philosophical sort of point. I know that sometimes these sorts of things can seem cumbersome, and it's a lot of steps and a lot of, you know, sometimes you got to have good tech know-how, which is why we're doing this show, to try to make it easier. But ultimately, it's better to put the tech back into recycled, either to resell it or to recycle it, than to just throw it into the landfill or your local dump. I mean, so that's the easiest thing to do, is just, you know, beat it with a sledgehammer so your data is safe and throw it in the dump. But it's not the best way to dispose of technology. So,
right,
you know, so just, yeah, before you kind of tune us out, because it's a lot of steps, it's worth it to do it this way.
Right, right. And I should say, if you just want to get rid of, like, if you have Apple gear and you just want to get rid of it, just take it to Apple, like, just take it to the Apple store. Mm-hmm. They'll just take it. You don't have to worry about any of this. The same thing with tech recycling centers. And again, we cover this in episode 112. You could take yourself to the recycling centers. I'm not sure.
If you've deactivated the location thing, but other than that, yes, you don't have to worry about the rest of it.
And I just wouldn't feel safe bringing it to even a recycling center without clearing my data off. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And don't assume that just because I threw it in the trash, my data is safe. There are trash pickers out there. People who are looking for that old phone that's got, you know, gold and platinum and other rare earth metals and stuff like that in it, plus data, digging stuff out of the trash. So, you know, that's also not a panacea. Let's talk about some of the specifics of, so I want to start with the Apple one, because I know that one the best. If you have a device that you're getting rid of, make sure to first sign out of iCloud and iTunes, you know, sign out of the stores on your devices. So if you go into settings, and let's see, settings, and at the top, you'll see your name, and you'll have, sign in and security. You'll see iCloud, you'll see Find My, and you'll see, all these various areas. You want to go in there and sign out of those. You want to go into Find My and deactivate Find My iPhone. It's a very important step. You want to go to iCloud in there, and you want to sign out of iCloud. And then you want to go into the, in this one, it used to be called the iTunes. Store. I don't think they call it iTunes anymore, but you want to go into the App Store and sign out of the App Store as well. And all of those things will, you know, detangle your account from this device. That's an important step. And frankly, I mean, this is something you should be doing whenever you're, like, upgrading, for instance, when you're getting a new phone. And even if you're handing your phone on to somebody, you want to do all this stuff anyway. If you're handing your phone on to one of your kids and you're just going to sign in on their account, you still want to do it, because if you don't, you get this weird amalgam of your stuff mixed with their stuff, and it becomes a pain.
Oh.
So, you want to sign out of iCloud and iTunes. You want to disable the Find My iPhone or iPad or Mac or whatever it is on the device you're using. And then if you have an Apple Watch paired with your iPhone, you want to go into the Watch app and make sure you unpair it. Even if you're getting rid of the Watch too, if you're getting rid of that phone, you want to unpair that so that it's not hanging on. So you want to do that. And then the next step would be to go to, let's see, it's under General Settings, General, and then scroll down to Transfer or Reset Phone. This is what's in iOS 17 as we're talking about this. And then there is a Reset and then Erase All Content in Settings. And that's the one you're going to want, is Erase All Content in Settings. And then you'll have to enter your passcode and Apple ID to confirm that. And that will erase your phone. And then you do need to make sure that the activation lock is off. So you do that by going to the iCloud.com website, sign in with your Apple ID, go to the Find iPhone section. And if your phone is not listed there, or if it's marked as erased, that means it is not activation locked. It is safe to sell, basically. See if to get rid of it or give it to someone or whoever, whatever you're doing with it.
On a comment, if it's an older iPhone, it won't be the where you mentioned it. It won't be, let's see, what did you say? Transfer and reset. It'll just be a reset and then reset all settings.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at is for iOS 17.
Right, the older versions.
Versions will be slightly different. Yeah, under the newer version, iOS, they've really made it much more explicit on how to use these things for transferring to a new phone. I mean, they get really good at, you know, anticipating people's needs for this sort of stuff. So that's really good. Similar things for iPad and similar for Mac. Obviously, there isn't really an activation lock on the Mac per se, but does have Find My Devices. You know, you mm-hmm. need to do some of this erasing so that if it has Touch ID or Face ID or various, biometric things, all that stuff needs to be erased and wiped out. And so that what it should look like is, you know, that when you open up the device or turn it on for the first time out of the box, you have that screen where it says hello and, you know, it wants you to choose the language that says, okay, I am back in a factory state, ready to go. Your data is clear.
It won't tell you if the activation lock wasn't fixed, though.
That, right,
that's why you're getting that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing is that you still could find one that had an activation lock on it, even with that screen.
Right, right. But
everything else is gone. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. For Android, it's similar. There are similar steps. Of course, it's going to be specific to Android, but.
And each Android implementation.
Right, right. So you need to go into, your Android phone will be connected to a Google account in this case. So you need to log out of your Google account on the phone, settings, account, Google, tap remove account. You'll want to deactivate the Find My Phone. And Pat, you were saying as we record, Google just announced some changes to their Find Phone service.
They have gone to the route of trying to have a network of findable devices like Apple. And so they just announced that they are revamping their Find My. So far, I haven't been able to see anything other than what we have here in terms of how to turn it on and off. But I would say if you are getting doing this on an Android in the next 6 months, check it out and make sure that there's no step that we've missed because now Google's changed the location of it.
Right. So currently you go into settings and security, Find My Device and turn it off there. And then you'll also need to turn off location tracking, settings, location, turn it off there. Newer Android devices running Android 5.1 or higher might have a feature called factory reset protection, which would require the previous owner's Google account credentials after a factory reset. So in other words, you need to disable that. So you go to settings, security, Find My Device, and then you turn off the Find My Device option. So it's the same thing. But you might need to
older version. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, but you want to make sure that that's off. I'm going to try to see if I can find Google's help pages for this because it will be important to get the specific steps on that. If you've got data encryption turned on your Android device, make sure to turn that off before doing the reset. You want to actually scramble your key. So you want to turn it on. So you encrypt it, go to settings, security, encrypt the phone or tablet. And then after encryption, perform the factory reset because that encryption will scramble the data. Then the reset deletes the encryption keys so that the data is unrecoverable. That's how that works. And as always with Android, depending on the manufacturer of your device, there may be more steps you need to take. So Samsung, LG, all that sort of stuff, you need to go check the manufacturer and see what they have to say. Okay, so that's Android and Apple devices, Windows, again, similar things. Sign out of your Microsoft account. You need to deactivate your Windows license, perhaps. Pat, what do you think?
I've never seen that. I've never seen anybody need to do that. And maybe in a corporate environment, you might need to do that, but not. And I've just basically just reinstalled after wiping the hard drive. I don't, you know, it knows by the hardware what the Windows key is now.
Right. So you don't even need to do. This must be an old instruction that I found. I wouldn't worry about the Windows license then. You can do a factory reset is by going to settings, update and security, recovery, and get started under reset this PC. And that will basically wipe out all personal files and installed apps. So again,
they give you the same option that Apple does that basically says, do you want to just wipe wipe this, or do you want to remove everything? You know, and so you want to remove everything.
Yep.
Older versions of mm-hmm. PCs may not have this. You might find a friendly tech who can then wipe the hard drive and put another operating system on it. That does a really good job.
Right. Yeah. Yes, that's true. Throw Linux on it.
Right.
If there are external storage devices, hard drives, USB dongles, you know, that sort of thing, make sure you take those off or out. That's especially big with a PC, especially when you get a tower. You know,
I've had way too many people that can't use their mice because they left the dongle in when they took it out.
Right. And you know,
you can't just buy the dongle.
Or they'll forget that there's a hard drive that they left installed. That's another one. You know, like an internal drive of some sort.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, to make sure you get everything uninstalled from it. And then, Pat, what do you think about checking for firmware or BIOS reset? Is that an issue at all?
I've never done that. No. The only thing is I have had a few clients that had really sensitive jobs that they had a BIOS password. And they would need to do that. Other than that, no, I don't bother.
Okay. So for most people, not. And that's pretty much it. I mean, anything we're missing? Anything you think we should highlight here that we may have missed?
I can't think of anything. That sounds like it.
Backup is about all I can say.
Well, and I was going to say the one thing that I actually put down in my pick of the week would help with any Dell machine helping you get that backup done.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. That'll be in the picks of the week later on. Yes. Yeah, and that's a good call, Father, because reemphasize the importance of having a good backup. And we talk about this when we talk about backups. Check the backup. Make sure it actually worked. Make sure that the backup data is not corrupted. That's very, very true.
I have a rule of thumb, too, that if somebody is helping me, you know, I'm helping somebody transfer their data from an old phone to a new phone, and they tell me, oh, let's wipe it. I say, no, wait 3 weeks, a month. Yep. Hold it there until you've got everything you know is all right. Same thing with a PC. I will not wipe a machine right after they give it to me. I will put a tape on it and say, wipe in a month, you know, with a date. Just because I have seen too many crying by, I thought I had everything off of there.
Yep. Right. Yep. Right. That is that's always the heart-stopping moment is that when it says, you know, reset, and I hit that reset, and I just stop, and I'm like, I got everything right. I have everything right. And I'll go and I'll look at it, at the data. I'm like, it's all there. Yeah.
Take a breather and say, I did it.
I've had instances like, don't do this tired. That's another one. Like if it's been a long day, it's the end of a long day, don't do it tired. Be well rested, be alert, be attentive. Actually, I don't hear that enough from tech people. So I'm going to be the one to say it.
Sure.
Don't do this stuff tired. Or when you're stressed or under the
emotional
gun. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, or something bad has just happened and you're trying to fix everything. Relax.
Well, that's a good rule of thumb. Even it helps you avoid getting scammed.
Yes. I was going to say, scammers don't prey be tired on, and answer that
on
email.
Fear and emotional responses. And then, when you're emotional, or tired or whatever, you're likely to make mistakes. The other thing that I would suggest is if you have a techie in the family, have them help you through these steps if you're at all nervous about it.
even if it's just over the phone saying, okay, this is what I'm doing next.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. I had an instance where I was, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, the SQPN website was hacked, and it was a sort of insidious little hack where if you just went to our website, the website came up, but if you Googled our website, which I never have to Google my website, I know where it is, right? But if you Googled it and clicked on the link, it would go to some gambling site in Asia.
Oh,
and
right.
It was a referrer hack, they call it. And someone had managed to insert code into some of the files for the website. And when it was happening, I was kind of freaking out, obviously. How long has this been going on? What else is broken? And I was like, I'm ready to start flailing at it. It's like, stop, calm down. It's not the end of the world. Things are fine. Take it step by step. And so I took it step by step and, you know, looked at things, acted calmly and rationally. And, you know, things are getting better. So we're still working on things, but the hole's been plugged. Now we're just cleaning things up in the aftermath. You should see a new site from SQPN soon, because that has spurred our need to update the site. So that said, you know, just I had
take a breath.
Yeah, I had an instance recently where I was upgrading my NAS, my Synology NAS. I was putting new hard drives in. And I know you can hot swap. You can pull out a drive and the thing will keep working just fine. Just throw a new drive in. So I pulled out a drive and things are going fine. And then I'm like, and now they pull out the other drive because I have to replace that one too.
Oh.
And it gave me the worst alarm you can imagine. And I like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Did I just destroy my NAS? Thankfully, Synology's very resilient. I put it back in and the drive I just took out, and then I waited hours for it to rebuild itself, and it got back to where it should be. Thankfully, because I didn't shut things down. I didn't panic. I didn't, you know, I just slid it back in and keep going.
So does Synology have a wait 15 minutes before I actually do this?
Yeah, right. That's what I should have done. And I was doing it. I was, you know, it was the end of the day. I had some time now. I should get this done. It was ill-advised. But I survived that one, thankfully. But, you know, it's just the sort of thing, you know, take your time. Don't be tired. Be relaxed when you do it. I think that's great advice for any tech stuff that you're doing. All right, so let's move on from there, and I want to move on to doing to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Technology, including this week Charles D, Dean and Andrea W, LaDonna E, Ray P, and Benoit P. It makes me think of the Glass Onion, and you know, the great detective Benoit. Benoit, you have a great name. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Technology and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Benoit, I really hope you have like a really deep New Orleans accent like Daniel Craig in Knives Out. I just love that. All right, let's talk about some headlines. And our first headline is from the Pew Research Center. They've done another one of their surveys of technology. And this one is entitled How Teens and Parents Approach Screen Time. And the big takeaway here is that most teens at least sometimes feel happy and peaceful when they don't have their phone. But 44% say this makes them anxious. And also half of parents say they've looked through their teen's phone. So it's kind of interesting, nothing too surprising here, I suppose, but 72% of U.S. teens say they often or sometimes feel peaceful when they don't have their smartphones, and 44% say it makes them feel anxious. Obviously, that doesn't add up to 100. People have, you know, right, different feelings at different times. So what do you think of all this? We can get into the details of the key findings here, but does it surprise you at all that they would respond this way?
I would have expected less to feel peaceful without their phones, just because they're most teenagers. That's just they grew up with this, and it's sort of, I mean, it's what they're used to. So to have that kind of taken away.
I think they understand. I think a lot of teens understand more than we give them credit for. They understand that it's not necessarily good to be constantly connected to everyone else all the time. Yet, mm-hmm. and paradoxically, they want to be connected all the time. Heck,
right.
I'm the same way. I'm a Gen Xer, you know. I want to be connected, and I know it's not good to be connected all the time. And I think that's what this is kind of pointing out is, you know, that these competing drives within us to we want the dopamine hit. We know it's not really good for us to be constantly getting a dopamine hit.
It kind of reminds me of when my kids were growing up, and basically, if I set some rules, they felt like they were protected from having to explain themselves to other people. And so therefore, if mom and dad nowadays would say, you've got to have your phone off for certain hours, then that relieves them of that obligation to always be on. And so I can see that part, you know, it kind of gives them a structure, a way to say, well, my parents won't let me.
I think you're hitting maybe on perhaps what is the crucial aspect, I think, of the whole thing is I think it also depends on the family. If you have parents that are modeling like proper use of all this technology, but also having parents being able to say, okay, we're going to shut it off for, you know, it's a family meal. We're going to sit down and talk to one another and engage in those kind of relationships. And we're going to have the phones away, you know, as we're doing a hiking activity outside, or, you know, or if the parents are always on their phones and modeling that sort of behavior, then you're probably going to have teenagers who are more anxious when they don't have their phones.
Right.
And the other aspect, I mean, that I would throw in there too, and you can't get around this, is being a teenager is such a tough time because you're trying to figure out who you are. You're trying to be accepted. You're trying to be liked. And so you want to be connected, but it's almost like it's better if you just take the phone away and let them be themselves. But you don't really learn how to do that until I didn't really learn how to be myself until the late 20s. Like, you know, it's
right.
So there's that.
You want to help them learn how to do that.
Yeah.
Right. Which again goes back then to the parents. How are the parents, you know, helping and modeling and showing their teenagers proper use and not use of these phones and other screens?
One of the things I found was interesting when I was reading through the article was talking about how the parents thought that they never were, you know, interrupting their family time to be on the phone. And the kids were saying, oh, it's about 30%. You know?
Yeah.
And so they didn't recognize their own dependence on the hardware like the kids did.
I think for some parents, too, they recognize that they're kind of hypocrites about it and don't force the rule on the kids because They don't want to be hypocrite.
Mean.
You know, I want to be on my phone too. One of the things they bring up is, you know, half of parents look through their teens' phones, and about half of the kids, you know, expect that their parents are looking through their phones. I do and I don't. I mean, we have some rules about what they're allowed to do on their phones for the young, you know. The 18-year-old is 18-year-old. She's an adult. She can do what she wants. But the younger ones, we have rules. And, you know, at least one of them has had trouble following the rule and not, you know, not going to game. He plays. I'm sorry. I let the cat out of the bag. He's one of my boys. He kept going to this, you know, casual gaming site and playing games when he's supposed to be doing his schoolwork. And so we ended up having to take his phone away. And but it's hard to keep up because the tools. I mean, there are these screen time tools in iOS and Apple Gears and Google has parental controls, but they're just not good enough. They're not good enough. They're hard to use. I'm a techie and I find them hard to use and they don't work half the time. You know, they're not showing me the data. I go and it says, this is where the data that shows you their use will appear eventually. Anytime now, like we've been doing this for months. Where's the data? You know, and so the tools for helping parents aren't there. And so I think a lot of parents get frustrated with trying to manage this. And it's hard. Our scout troop for our girls scout troop had to implement the rule. You know, unless you are talking to your parents, you are not to be on your phone during events, outings. You know, we go camping and these girls would be sitting around the campfire in their phones, like talking to their friends back home. It's like, be present here. You're in the woods. Right. You're a scout. And so it is, it's hard. And yet, as the survey shows and the kids say, there are a lot of benefits to having these things. They you know, having this ability to connect. My oldest is a homeschooled girl, who her friends are all over the country. She has real friendships with kids all over the country. She wouldn't have that otherwise.
Right. Well, and I think it was interesting, too, is that, talking about the parents going through the kids' phones, it's a little bit of a regulation thing that if the child knows that the option is there, that the parents can look at it, I think they do a little bit better job monitoring what they do, as opposed to, they don't know mom and dad is looking through the phone and therefore they get really angry. Mm-hmm. So I think the expectation of it is available to us to monitor, we may not do it all the time, but we could spot check once in a while.
Yep.
I dislike how the article says it as parental snooping. No, as if like the parent doesn't have the right to know what their kid is up to. My take on it is as long as if mom and dad are paying for my cell phone, they should have every right to see anything that I do on that phone. And especially for a teenager, and not because you want to be a tyrannical parent, but because you want to help safety. Your child.
Right.
Well, safety for one, because there's all sorts of bad chat messaging services out there, but also the role of a parent is to help their child use and learn to use this technology responsibly. And how can you do that if it's, here's your iPhone, good luck. Right. So I feel like there should be an expectation that a kid knows, mom and dad can seize my phone at any time and I, have to give it up. And they're not doing it to be mean. They're doing it to help.
Right.
Not that a teenager is quite going to maybe see it that way, but that should be the goal.
Well, and I think you hit it too, Dom, that it also depends upon the age of the person and the maturity of that child.
Yep.
What measures you take and what restrictions you place. And that's going to vary a lot in families.
Right. And I agree. I don't like the word snooping because it's not snooping. We're helping. We're providing safety, making sure that my child is taking their prescription medication that the doctor prescribed isn't interfering. It's helping them, or making sure they've done their homework or all these things to make them safe. It's just another safety. Like, I don't want to hook them up to the fire hose of junk, self-censorship of the internet and just say, yo, go at it. Like, no, I want them to learn how to use it because it's going to be part of their lives. But right. I also don't want
them to be hurt by it.
Right. No. I want to help them. I want to give them training wheels, per se. So there's a lot of interesting information, a lot of interesting data in this survey. You get to take a look. There's a complete report. You can dig right into it and find all kinds of interesting information. The Pew Report is always doing these different surveys on a regular basis about internet use in families. And last year they did a teen social media and technology survey. So there's all kinds of interesting ones. So, I like to keep up with them, but check this one out. We'll put it in the link in the show notes. Our next headline, this is fun. I just think this is really cool. The headline is how Apple plans to update new iPhones without opening them. So you ever get a new iPhone or phone in general from, whether it's an Android phone or Apple iPhone, you get it home, you open it up, you can't wait to use it. And it's like, now you have to wait 30 minutes for the operating system to update because since this shipped from China, we've actually updated the operating system. It's like, oh, and it kind of is like harshes on the cool, I just want to get used to it.
I like the phrase.
This Apple has developed this rack. It's a piece of hardware, and you'll see a link in the show notes that I'll take you to. You'll see a picture of what it looks like, and it's they call it the toaster because it looks like these toaster racks. And basically, they put a sealed iPhone box in a slot, and using a combination of technologies, including MagSafe and probably Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, it activates the phone, it turns the phone on, updates the system software, and then turns it off again. And I think they said it takes like 20 minutes per phone, and they, and based on the image here, it looks like they can do like 20 or 30 phones at a time. So, you know, they could probably update their entire stock of phones in a day or
overnight,
so.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's kind of cool. I think it's a pretty neat idea.
I like it. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting that it does it wirelessly, which, you know, they keep talking about how Apple wants to get away from having a port on the phone at all. This may be, you know, a precursor of whatever that future tech is, where they, you can do everything without having to plug in a cable at all. So, then our final headline is from AP. And this is interesting, given the recent eclipse that we had this week. This one is also some astronomical information. A faster spinning Earth may cause timekeepers to subtract a second from world clocks. And what they're saying is the Earth is speeding up its spin a little bit. And they predict that in 2029, we'll have to take a second off of the clock. So what that means, I guess it's like at 11:59 and 59 seconds, they would hold it there for an extra second. I guess that's what the way it would do. Is,
yeah,
they call it
that would be subtracting it rather than adding it. Yeah.
Yeah, a negative leap second, they call it.
Well, or that would be jumping. Wouldn't it jump ahead? Because like a leap year is you hold it back a day.
Right. They call it, well, they say a negative leap. So it's, have to skip a second. Oh, I think so
wouldn't it jump it forward a second?
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Like a double negative in English. Like,
yes, I think that's what they're doing. It's a negative leap. Just skip ahead. Skip ahead, Brother Maynard.
We lost a second.
Yeah. We'll skip over a second and go from 59, you know, 11:59, right, 59 to 12:01. Yeah.
If the Earth is turning faster, it's got to be a second, one less second existing.
Right.
The metaphysics of this could get interesting.
I've read this article, and that's exactly what I thought. Was like, okay, the moment you step back and think about time, try this at home. Like, try to define what time is with your family. Have that as a dinner table discussion, and you're going to find that it's really hard to define what it is exactly.
And
it's funny because like it's all. We sort of we create a digital atomic clock, which I mean is based in the Earth's rotation and whatnot. But even that is all
it's arbitrary.
It's all what we created. I mean, we could go back to just sunrise and sunset, but but even that wouldn't really work with our global worldwide communication system. I mean, it's
right. Time is entirely subjective.
You run yourself in circles.
Yeah, as Einstein pointed out, time is relative. And relative where you are and you know how fast you're going. So and what I was kind of surprised was how often they've actually changed the clocks over the last 50 years.
Oh yeah,
we've been bouncing all over the place by fractions of a second. And again, Father, you pointed out when they invented atomic clocks, they realized how the Earth's rotation actually does vary quite a lot over time. It is not super consistent and never needed to be.
And we want it to be like with our tech things. We want everything precise and exact. And
yes.
Nature's not so exact.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that they said the Russian satellite systems all is based on astronomical time, not atomic time. And so I'm like, what do they have? Like, you know, a sand glass, hourglass inside the satellite, you know?
It'd have to be the sundial.
They have a sundial in the satellite.
It's crazy to just think about too. Like, I mean, we've lived with leap years for forever and just take it for granted that we have to do this thing every 4 years and you don't really ever question it. But if we stop doing it, we'd be in a position of like some of the older style calendars where like Easter would start to shift into summer and then fall and then winter. I mean, that's the whole reason we have that leap year, so that the seasons stay within the right. But it's all just kind of arbitrary. This is how we deal with the passage of one thing to the next that we call time.
Right.
The earth spins faster at some points and slower at other points, and we're in a position where it's getting faster.
And all of these companies, governments, institutions all have to agree on the time and any changes made to it.
I loved there was a quote there. I don't know if you're going to get there, but it was like people care so much because the stakes are
so small.
Oh, how do they phrase it?
The stakes
so small.
Like the fights are so serious because the stakes are so small.
Yeah. But this is.
It's this absurdism.
A friend of the show, Jeff Geerling, who's a YouTuber, did a great series of videos on timekeeping, computer timekeeping. I'll see if I can find his playlist for that. Just kind of basically pointing out how computers and networks keeping time is such a big deal and how difficult it is to keep accurate time. And accurate time down to the millisecond is vital for a lot of things like financial transactions. If I execute a buy order for 1 million shares of a company's stock and it's off by a fraction of a second, that could be millions of dollars difference. Yeah. So it is very important to have accurate time, and that's why they're so big on this. And big fat earth just, you know, is spinning, you know, willy-nilly and doesn't care.
Doing its own thing.
Big hippie earth spinning in spinning in a meadow. Like, whatever, man. I spin however fast I want to be. I'm a little fatter this year, so I'm going to spin slower.
My dance.
Just picture Cheech and Chong. Yeah. All right. So, faster earth. Spin, spin, spin. That does it for our headlines, and let's move on to our picks of the week. Pat, what is your pick this week?
Well, this is a freebie for people who have Dell computers that are beginning to get old, and they maybe don't boot or whatever. And this is a common problem with a lot of operating systems. They just don't boot up. And so it's really kind of hard to go in and copy your data off when you need to move it to another machine. Well, Dell has now put a recovery routine in the boot up process before it ever gets to Windows, that you can hit a key and it'll give you choices. Some of it's repair your computer, diagnose your computer. One of them is backup your computer. And I had an option I had a need to use this recently where I tried to boot the machine. It wouldn't boot. I tried Linux boot. I tried a special recovery boot. None of the new BIOSes let you. They're not a BIOS anymore. Basically, they don't let you boot from an external device. So I was desperate, and I found in the startup boot up process, there was an option that says recovery and backup. And I said, oh, let me try it. So I was able to use that, plug in an external drive. It copied all of the standard places that it would normally copy your data from. And I found out today, you can even go in and add additional folders, like if you had something at the root of the drive that you needed to back up. And it backs it up to an external drive. And then, you know, you take that out and you plug it into your new machine and copy your documents, copy your downloads, copy it all over to the new machine. And so for those people who aren't techies, trying to get their data off of a machine that won't boot is astronomically hard. It really is, which is why I stay in business. but at any rate, so this gives people who have, and I've got a couple of Dells that are like 2 or 3 years old, and they had it in them. I just didn't even know it. So that's why I wanted to highlight it, is because it's not been advertised.
Interesting.
It, you know, you think of Dell being able to remote into your machine and take a look at the hardware. That's what I thought the support recovery option was. And it's got this built in there. So, and the other thing is almost all the machines these days, the operating systems and the vendors are pushing encryption, which is nice if you've got something sensitive. It's not so nice if you've got a recovery problem, because if you've got an encrypted hard drive and you take it out and try to copy data off of it, you can't get it off. It's useless. And at least with that machine, I was able to boot and copy off the data. And then I thought, well, let me get another copy of it. So I found some other way, and I couldn't use the data because it was BitLocker encrypted. But by booting within the operating, I mean, within the machine itself, it was able to grab the data.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, that is a big issue, is the encryption on the, you know, drive based encryption, where.
Yeah. And I hate it. I do. Unless you've got a business need for it. To me, it makes more difficult trying to help somebody who's got a dead machine.
Right. That's makes backups, especially offsite backups, all the more important, because, you know, that becomes the only way that that data exists if you can't get it off the machine. So.
Right. But I have a lot of clients that this is the first time I'm seeing
them.
And so therefore I haven't had a chance to get them set up with backups.
Folks, the number one thing you can do for your family who are not techy like you is get them backing up their data just into the cloud somewhere, just somehow.
Buy them a hard drive, get them in a cloud,
something, anything, but just get them started. Father, what's your pick this week?
So my pick this week is a application for Apple devices, unfortunately, for those of you who are not on Apple devices, but it's called PDF Expert. The reason that I like it, I downloaded it on my iPad because I was looking for an app that was user-friendly, clean-looking to read, specifically for me to read PDFs. I don't really need a lot of the extra bells and whistles, but being in graduate studies, I'm pulling journal articles and PDFs all the time, and I was tired of having about 10 windows open on my MacBook, and it's just not as... It's more cumbersome to read PDFs on a MacBook or on a desktop than it is to hold an iPad and read it as kind of almost like an ebook. And so I came across this app, and I think it looks sleek. It works well. I use the free version, which has just kind of basic features, but that's really all that I need. There are paid versions, so you can do all sorts of things. You can edit PDFs, you can annotate, you can sign, you can organize and do all sorts of extra stuffs. But the problem is that there's a $7 a month, subscription fee for that. Or if you download on the Mac, you can do a one-time purchase of $140 to use all those extra features, which I personally don't need, but somebody who's in doing all sorts of PDF creation and stuff might need the extra things. But that's what I use, and it works really well. I can highlight and read and get where I need to go with it. So
the cool. Subscription does get you the iPhone, iPad, and Mac version. So that's one of the big differences, whereas the single time is just the Mac version, as you said.
Just for the Mac,
But it's you know, if you need a PDF program and you don't want to pay the Adobe tax, you don't want to, you know, get a Creative Cloud subscription and all that sort of stuff, it's not a bad option. And when you're doing it month to month, you know, then if you're not going to need it except occasionally, then buy $7 for a month and then don't use it till the next, you know, then it's 6 months later when you need it again. That's not a bad way of doing it. So I agree. And I've used PDF Expert. It is a good program. It does all the things that Acrobat does. So it's you're not losing anything there. I mean, except the very high end publisher stuff, which most 99% of people don't need.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So my picks this week is some cables. Yes, cables. We all love cables. These are exciting. But these are actually cool. These are USB-C to USB-C cables from Inuu. I don't know. It's one of those Amazon brands where it's like five capital letters that chosen at random by some marketing guy overseas somewhere. I'll put a link in the show notes. But what is it? You get 2 6-foot cables, braided cables, which are really nice, that are rated for 100 watts, which is also very nice, because the big thing with USB cables these days is you don't always know what you're getting. You don't know if you're getting a data and power cable, or if you're getting a just a power cable, and maybe it's not a fully, you know, a full powered power cable. These are 100 watt. And one of the nice things about them is they have a little light on the end, head, on the adapter, the end of it, the bit that plugs in. It's late. And when it's plugged in and power is flowing, it's green. So it's just a little green light. You don't want this next to your bed, obviously, when you're trying to sleep at night. But it's really handy when I can look over and I can just see, oh, my MacBook is charging because the little green light is on. And again, these are nice cables. They feel nice in the hand. They're nice and thick, so they're not going to get crimped really easy and that sort of thing. I've been using them for a while, and they're really good. They go great with my Anker battery packs and whatnot.
And is there a price on those?
$10 for two. So they're $5 each.
See the $10. Okay, yeah. Good. Very good. Good nice. Price.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I kind of missed the headline there. It's only $10, so it's a good deal for those. And I've had them for a while now, 4 or 5, 6 months, and they've been good. So excellent. Good. So that'll do it for our picks of the week and our discussion. We'd love to hear from you if you had anything you wanted to tell us, or if you get any feedback or anything we've talked about, or anything you want to add to the discussion. You can do so by commenting on the show at sqpn.com/technology. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to technology@sqpn.com. Visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. You can find links from our discussion and our picks of the week on our show notes at starquest.fm/TEC251. Remember to like each episode of Secrets of Tech on Facebook or retweet us on X at SQPN and leave us comments. And until next time, Pat Scott, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of technology.
Adios.
Father Andrew Kinstetter, thank you as well.
Absolutely.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.